Thanks for downloading this podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy wherever they get their podcasts.
Delivering all the news, the informed views, and just telling great motorsport stories since 2003. Powered by the racetalk.com. This is On the Grid.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to the On the Grid podcast for your weekly look at everything going on in the world of motorsport and a little bit closer to home as well. Richard Crail with you this week. Tony Shebeki away on assignment. That's what we're rolling with anyway. So he'll be back next week. Don't worry about that. There'll be more of the Shebekster to come. But we've got a good show for you coming up as we count down to the Boost Mobile Gold Coast 500. Yes, we're going back to surfers, paradise, sun, sea, surf, bit of sand, concrete fences, and supercars. And can't wait to do that. There's Carrera Cup on the streets. There's S5000 as well. We'll have a look back at some NASCAR, some Formula One, the Benz Shannon's round, and the end of an era there, and a continuing era of more rain in motorsport, which we don't like. It's triggering. I don't want to talk about it anymore. Happier things first. To kick the show off, a fascinating chat. We thought we'd go a little bit behind the scenes to work out what makes a fast racing car tick on the streets of surface paradise. And to do it, we've caught up with a friend of the show and a really good engineer, a race-winning engineer in supercars and indeed Carrera Cup these days, in Michael Henry. He's first on this episode of On the Grid.
There's more great motorsport stories coming next. On the Grid.
Well, supercars are back on the streets of surface paradise this weekend. Everyone's looking forward to going back to Queensland for what is one of the highlight events on the calendar. Regardless of what category you work in, there's sun, there's surf, there's other exciting things to watch, and a great racetrack with all of the challenges that street circuit racing presents. And to preview it, we wanted to do something just a little bit different this week. So we're going to go down the route of what it's like from inside the bunker, inside the garage with race teams and their engineering department to cater for the unique challenges that the Gold Coast presents. And I could think of no one better to get on the phone and talk to about this than a man that has engineered race wins and championships in supercars and some success on the Gold Coast as well. He's currently heading up the engineering for Sonic Motor Racing in Porsche Carrera Cup, but he was right there in the coalface in supercars as well. His name's Mike Henry, and it's nice to have him back on the show. Hello, Michael.
G'day, mate. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for jumping on. Appreciate your time.
No problems.
Hey, Gold Coast. She's a unique old joint as a racetrack, isn't it?
Absolutely, it is. Yeah, it's we don't really have any like it. I mean, obviously, Adelaide's a street circuit and it's got plenty of concrete, but there's none quite like the Gold Coast, that's for sure.
What are the challenges you look at? So let's say you're back with the Holden Racing team, which you ran for a long time very successfully. You're in the pre-brief for a round. Gold Coast is next on the calendar. So you've got Bathurst done, 2011, you've got it won. What do you sit down and talk to the guys about when it comes to prepping for this event in particular?
This one, particularly because it comes after Bathurst, it's quite a different circuit. So, and the focus for everybody is Bathurst, obviously. So when you come away, you're probably not given as much thought as you might give to, you know, well, obviously Bathurst, but other races, you're sort of thinking always a race or two ahead, I guess. And so when you get to the Gold Coast, you've got to have your wits about you because it is such a tight old place that the car's very different to what you're going to have had at Bathurst. And so you've got to sort of not reinvent the wheel, obviously, because we've all been there before, so we know where to start. But ultimately, you get there and it's a very different weekend to what you've just come away from.
Obviously, you go there with confidence in your car and the crew in bolting it all together. But do you guys sit there in the bunker and watch those things pound over those curbs and launch themselves into the air and the super slow-mos where all the body panels are flopping around on the front of them? Do you look at that and go, oh, God, I hope it all stays together?
Yeah, I'm a mechanic by trade before I became an engineer. I could never watch it without cringing, waiting for it to fall apart. The chicane up the back straight is unique. I don't think we go anywhere else where we smash the cars over the curb so hard. And there's endless great footage of cars flying through the air. So it is that corner alone is something you've got to really focus on because it means to those that that fiddle about with dampers and springs and, you know, the way the car settles after the impact, the amount of work you have to put in to understand how the car will handle that is quite a lot. So, yeah, I do watch it every time. And that's not the only part of the Gold Coast that makes you cringe.
Yeah, so, it's a lot. what's more important on those curbs? Is it how the car launches or how it lands?
Well, you can't have one without the other. So from a sciencey spin-your-propeller sort of way, the way it takes off and the way it lands, you've got to have control of both, because if you go in there and it sort of flies into there too hard, then the way to land will be awkward. If it's not high enough and you land on the back of the curb, that's when you really do some damage. So you've got to make sure you fly long enough to get over the curb, and you really want it to sort of use the other side of the curb as a landing ramp, Evel Knievel style. So it's a bit of a balancing act. There's a lot of work goes on to make sure they fly right, because if you don't, then you won't carry the speed and then it hurts. So, you know, you have to get through that thing really quick and throw it all around the place and then get back on the deck really quick and make sure you've got drive for the run up to the left-hander off the beach.
It's one of the few tracks that where if you're an informed spectator and you know what you're watching, you can look at the cars through, especially the beach chicane, but probably turn 1, 2, 3 chicane as well, and you can go, yep, that's a good car, or that's pretty ugly.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. The other one that always gets me is that 1 and 2 at Adelaide.
Yes.
In a similar sort of way. So when you take those curbs, you often see some cars land and they're almost flat, and then other cars land and there's a big oscillation in the suspension. And that's the thing I look for to see whether a car's going all right, that as they come down and land on the deck. If there's lots of movement vertically in the suspension when they land, then there's work to be done. So you want them to land very smoothly so that the tyre is able to then grip up and get on with its job, really.
And do you, if you're in a team where perhaps your damper program isn't quite as evolved as, say, a 888, do you watch that in that first practice and see Jamie gliding over these curbs? Do you sit there and go, oh, no, this is going to be a long weekend?
I mean, obviously you do, and you know, it's much more often that you look at those sorts of things. You know, obviously we all look at the lap times. No bloke I know races that doesn't, but ultimately, yeah, that you can soon see whether somebody's got their car together. It doesn't necessarily mean they'll always have the best lap, because often what you might do to the car for the chicane might not work as well, you know, powering off the hairpin at the bottom of the circuit, or that, you know, the last complex is actually quite tricky. And so to get a good line through the last complex can be quite, you know, that run onto the front straight, so critical for your lap time, that it doesn't always bode well or come out the same, that if it's good over the chicane, it doesn't necessarily mean it's good out the last corner.
And how do you cope with the evolution? Because the street circuit's always changing, grip level change, councils will put down new surface or they'll patch potholes or whatever. And even the curbs have changed over the years. So
100%. Yeah. And you know, we add that to that, probably the introduction of the circuit under the ground to see whether you jump in the curbs or not.
Oh yeah.
So the shortcuts, where, you know, in the past you probably get away with the odd shortcut, where now you can't get away with anything. So yeah, there is, every year is different. And I mean, this year particularly, more than ever, because it's been a while since we've been. So, you know, if I look back, I always still whinge that they cut half the track off, you know, and we should go back to the old circuit.
But yeah,
I'm sure the Gold Coast Council don't want to move the tram. So there might be a bit of an issue. But yeah, the evolution of any street circuit is always something. I mean, all racetracks have it. Doesn't matter where you go, we'll go to a track that's been, you know, resurfaced and the grip's fantastic, and then over a period of years it disappears. So, you know, you have to keep adjusting to make sure the car will drive properly for that year. So yeah, there is a lot of work has to go on, and I think this weekend for all the categories, but you know, obviously for V8s, for Carrera Cup, the guys that spend a bit more time engineering, how they roll out the box will be quite interesting this year, because when was the last time we were there? 19, I guess. Yep. So it'll be quite a fascinating weekend for that.
And how much does it differ in a Carrera Cup situation, for example, where everyone's got the same gear, where you haven't got teams, and supercars, to be fair, are going down that road as well with the controlled damper, but everyone's got the same stuff. So you can play with exactly the same settings on your shocks that Lee Guy can down at McElroy Racing or the blokes down at Tetwork. So how do you approach that from a Carrera Cup point of view? And is it a different preparation to how you would with a supercar when you're perhaps working with more bespoke stuff that you've got fingerprints on developing throughout the year?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the V8 side of it, firstly, obviously they've got, you know, over what we would have in Carrera Cup springs and dampers, they've got other things as well. They can move the suspension points around a lot more than we can. So, yeah, there's a lot more scope. Sometimes that's worse because you can get yourself tied up in knots real quick if you haven't got a grip of it all. You know, just because they've got more toys to play with doesn't necessarily mean you're going to do a better job. But ultimately, they do have more toys to play with, and it means there are more ways to adapt to specific things. You know, often you'll get a driver come back and say, it's pretty good everywhere, but this corner's awful, or, you know, my brakes are terrible and I'm really struggling on the brakes. It's got great power down, but it's awful brakes. And there are more ways to adjust that with a V8 supercar than we do with a Carrera Cup car. So with the Cup car, you've got to do everything you can to find whatever difference you need to find. And obviously we can't do springs and dampers. So we do have roll bars and there's a degree of adjustability there. But then obviously that affects, you know, something that we have, not at every racetrack, but we do at the Gold Coast, is the change of direction through the chicane and turns one and, or one, two, three, whatever we call that. So, yeah, ultimately, if you wanted to go too soft on a bar, then the change of direction will be washy and soft. If you stiffen up to give you a good change of direction, then you might struggle with power down. You might struggle with oversteering corners, things like that. So, yeah, with Carrera Cup, there's probably more focus on adapting what you can to suit the driver and then getting the driver to work with us to how we'll drive it. You know, at the end of the day, we'll just ring Lee up and ask him and see what he's doing and copy him, I guess.
I'm sure he'll tell you.
Oh, absolutely.
And probably aside from the top bit of Mount Panorama, this place has got the least margin for error than any racetrack. And the quick way around is you've got to scrape the thing on the walls, don't you? And like the supercar 100%. Teams, I mean, they take a mirror off the cars for qualifying so they don't tear it off.
Yep, absolutely.
So how's driver management work with that? Because the margin for error is smaller than at any other place we go, perhaps.
Yeah, 100%. It is, you know, the other, what we mentioned before, Adelaide and obviously Townsville's got a bit of concrete, but nowhere has this much and this little room for error. And, you know, we have a runoff at the end of the straight at the bottom and the end of the straight at the top, but there's not much runoff anywhere else. Yeah. So, you know, asked before about the cringy moments, is that through the first, second and third corners, how many blokes clip the wall on the left-hand side? We'll see it this weekend for sure. It'll happen probably in every category. Hopefully it's not our cars for sure. So yeah, it is something that's, you've got to have your wits about you and add to it with Carrera Cup, that this is final round for the championship. So a lot of, I don't know whether there are any other categories this year that are in that boat, but for Carrera Cup, it's always the last round. So whenever points are tight, you have to push, but ultimately at the same time, then you're raising the risk. So it's a balancing act, isn't it, to keep the driver focused on going as hard as he can whilst not overstepping the mark. You know, the amount of times we see blokes come down to the chase at Bathurst, run off through the grass, no problems, should be right. Maybe you rip the splitter off and you might have to stop and practice to fix it. But here, you've only got to touch the wall a bit and you can be in all sorts of trouble.
Talk about Carrera Cup. Are you happier being the pursuer rather than being the pursued? Because you're 70-odd points behind championship lead with young Aaron Love, who's done an amazing job this year. I mean, he's missed two rounds, and to go into the final round as a shot at the championship's remarkable regardless. But are you happy being the chaser rather than the one being chased?
I think I'm an old bloke now, so I don't think we even look at the points, to be totally honest, Richard. yeah, we obviously know where we're at in the championship, but to go to this weekend, Aaron's had a great run over the last couple of rounds. He's really the driver of the moment in that regard. So we want to keep any talk of the championships is just, you know, it's good for you blokes. That's what you've got to do in the media. But for us, I think the last thing we're thinking about is that at the end of the day, we are a long way behind points-wise. Bathurst hurt us with the two races washed out, and then the second one stopped. So had the points been different coming into this round and a bit closer, then, yeah, clearly the pressure would be different. But I think ultimately this point in time, you know, Harry's just got to keep it clean and he's there. So it's really his to lose. It's not ours to win, I guess. You know, with that much, it's only 60 points a race in Carrera Cup, so we need 73. So, you know, if we go and win every race, that's still not going to be enough. So I think we, you know, you go there wanting to, obviously, and that's the focus. But at the end of the day, I think our eyes are just on trying to get each race done, and that's about it, really.
I was going to say about Aaron, I know the results haven't flowed for him overseas as perhaps he would have liked them to, but here, man, he's been electrifying, and everything he's done has been great. Like, he's getting the tyre switched on in qualifying quickly, he's putting the thing on pole, his cold tyre pace has been really impressive early in a race, and he's building that margin. He's passing when he needs to, not that he's had to do much of it this year. Have you noticed a step up in his performances from the last, last year was a shortened season, but even compared to that?
Yeah, I mean, obviously within the team, you see it a bit differently, but, and so, yeah, I've seen the step up. I think it actually came more sort of towards the end of last year.
Sure.
But it was a shortened season, double rounds at Bathurst, all that sort of thing. So it doesn't really show on a scorebook sort of thing where you're at. But I felt like he, coming towards the end of last year, was really on song. And we took him to Grand Prix at the start of the year to get some miles before he went to Europe, and he was probably even better again. So, yeah, I think he's a pleasure to work with. He's a good young kid. He goes great. So he's easy to work with in that I think he's come to the point where, and we've had him with us long enough, that the communication between engineers and drivers, you end up with your own little dialogue, if you like, and buzz terms and, you know, words that we all use. Hand gestures at times. Old Armand used to wave his arms around at me, his hands around at me to tell me what the car was doing. And it took me a little while to understand what it meant, but I got to it. But Aaron's at that point now where it's not difficult to decipher what he wants out of the car. And the other thing, his ability to adapt. So if, for example, we've got it good over the curbs, but it's not so good at the last corner, then we can talk about the line and adjusting what he does. And he's quite able or highly able to adjust his own input. So I think that's where he's at. You know, the European thing, he's learning new tracks, he's a new team, all of that sort of stuff. And you know, to think that you're going to go to Europe and expect to be quick straight off the bat is difficult. You know, we go to every racetrack having looked at last year's, the year before, watch vision. Generally, for a lot of tracks, we've tested, you know, and if we haven't tested, we're able to draw on, you know, lots of experience. So where I think in Europe it's hard for anybody that goes there first up, you know, the first time you go around any, you know, Silverstone, anything, you don't know where the corners go. You don't know quite how tight they are. You can look at it forever, but at the end of the day, it's experience. So I think, to me, I couldn't be happier with where he's at. He's so easy to work with. He's a good young bloke. He's a good sense of humour. We've taught him a bit at Sonic, so corrupted him maybe. And so there's a really good atmosphere. You know, and you look at then Simon Fallon running with him. I think Simon's been able to benefit from sharing a garage with Aaron. It's been good. So the last couple of rounds, he's found a bit of pace, which, yeah, it's really nice. It's a nice way to go racing, that's for sure.
Yeah, he's come on leaps and bounds in the second half of the year, especially, for sure. Yep. Last one, and we really appreciate your time, Mike. Appreciate it. And You've engineered some success on the GC over the years, and we were talking before we hit the record button about 2009 with Tasman, with Bargs in a pole position. But do you have a favourite Gold Coast street circuit memory at all? Plenty of off-track, I'm sure.
There's plenty of off-track. Yeah, I'm old enough to remember the good old days of the Gold Coast. Yes. So it had nothing to do with racing.
No.
Without question, for me personally, one of the greatest, my favourite memory of motorsport is Foster's win 2015. So he'd had a similar situation where at the start of that year we'd had, I think, no points in Adelaide, very few points from the Grand Prix. So I think we went to round three at Phillip Island, almost two full rounds behind. I think it was Richo, and he'd won just about every race. So we came away from Sandown with just in front of the championship. Bathurst was a nervous weekend, and I think we were on a par, and that was about it. So going into the Gold Coast, the pressure was massive. And for Nick, you know, I love him to death. He's a good lad. So, to get his championship there, for sure, when I look back at the Gold Coast, that is without doubt the best day I've ever had there, I think.
Yeah, and it's the largest comeback in Carrera Cup history by a margin.
Yeah.
And the only one that would be bigger, Michael, was if Aaron goes and does it this weekend. So you trump your own record. That was a pretty special weekend, though, to see Nick do that.
It was good.
Mate, thanks for your time. Really appreciate it. Love your insight into what makes the Gold Coast tick. And look forward to catching up for the big Carrera Cup finale and maybe a refreshing beverage or two on Sunday evening at the awards night.
I'm sure I could find room for one beer, Richard.
I'm sure you can. Michael, thank you.
Thanks, mate.
Mike Henry joining us here on The Grid.
You're listening to the latest from around the motorsport world. On The Grid.
You are listening to the On The Grid podcast. Richard Crail with you. Tony Shebeki on assignment somewhere. We just don't ask questions anymore. The answers get stranger and stranger the more they go. Delighted to say that joining me to preview this weekend's Boost Mobile Gold Coast 500, look back at the Formula One, look back at the NASCAR, the rainout at the Bend and everything else is Mark Walker. Hello, Mark.
Richard Crail, I don't know what you're going to do to the Gold Coast weather, but I hope you don't do what you did to your local event there in the weekend, mate. That was not ideal.
Unfortunate was the word thrown around. Unfortunate with some form of just desperate resolution, I suppose. Resignation? I don't know. Bloody rain. It's awful. Tom Archuli is with us as well. Hello, mate. Nice to have you back on the show.
Hello, Crazy. How Crazy? Marco, how are you today?
We're good, I think.
Yes. Yeah, I'm not going to lie to you both. I'm having some issues dealing with the rain. And it's Tuesday night and it's rained both days since the Bend. And every time I hear rain on my roof, I'm a little bit triggered, to be honest with you. And if it rains at the Gold Coast, it could break me. Because it's now three consecutive race meetings in a row where rain has cancelled, firstly, a Porsche race, which I'm obviously involved in, but B, a large chunk of a race meeting that I've been at, and three race meetings in a row where this sucker's been the idiot behind the microphone when it happens and has to sit there twiddling their thumbs trying to entertain a TV audience. And I can't do it anymore. It's broken me.
The Porsche Motorsport Spare Parts Department used to have the best Christmas party in the whole wide world. And
cancelled this year. Cancelled. It's off.
They haven't had enough racing to crash cars.
No, it's off. It's off. And it's same for Audi Custom Sport Racing Australia. Off. 888, the Mercedes-AMG dealers, off. GTs didn't race. So no $25,000 nose cones written off there. Yeah, it's grim times for everybody.
Well, Krause, you can add to your Twitter bio that you are now an expert filler. To add to your F1,
you're a gap filler.
Krause's gap filler. Sponsorship opportunities here for a certain gap filler company.
You're a marketing man, Tommy. Get on this. I feel like Selly's need to sponsor not only the show but me personally. I would wear a Selly's hat with no more gaps on it. I feel like that would be perfect. I think it just works perfectly. It would be good, right?
You do know that one of Doric's sister brands, Cowdroid, do fillers for and seals, so we could do the little seal the gaps Krause style.
I have them on literally on my front door, so mate, let's talk. We'll talk off air. Yeah, challenging weekend. I don't know how much either of you two saw of it at the Bend, but it is a little poignant moment for those that have been around long enough to see it, because it was technically the end of an era, Mark, in that it was the last round of the artist formerly known as the Shannons Nationals, because next year it becomes a unified series with MA Motorsport Australia and ARG joining forces to co-promote what will be known as the Speed Series. So the Shannons Nationals, which was formed in 2006 as the CAMS National Motor Racing Championships, became the Shannons Nationals in 2007. It's the longest running second tier series in Australian motorsport, behind Eclipse Super Touring, lasted longer than Pro Car, and was a really good stable platform for second tier motor racing behind the Supercar program for a long time. And that was the last round under that sort of timeline, I suppose, dating back to early 2006 at Wakefield Park Raceway. So a little bit of a moment there for those of us that have been around it for a long time.
Hasn't it come a long way, though? I mean, we sort of hung out at a lot back in the very early days. Like, I did the PR for it back in 2010. And back in those days, you used to, everyone roll up with their car trailer behind their ute with their, you know, decent race cars, but you'd used to have the F3s and the production cars and the Commodore Cup, and away you'd go for your few race meetings every year, being shown on Speed Week weeks afterwards to four punters on the hill. These days, there's people through the gates. There's genuine, serious TV money being thrown at big-time broadcasts, spectators on the hill, proper corporate money involved. You look at the paddock now, and it's doubles. It could be a supercar round. Like, the amount of investment that is now involved at the second tier of Australian motorsport is just incredible. And it's just grown so much in these last few years, despite whatever the pandemic's thrown at it. So it's certainly come a long way. You know, is there room for like a third tier sort of thing? It's, you know, how does Australian motorsport sort of sort itself out? Because there's still going to be other race meetings that Motorsport Australia have mentioned that they're going to put on. What shape and form they take, we're not quite sure yet, but there's probably going to be some space there for some, you know, standalone production car races and stuff that have been on those events, like on the weekend at the Bend. So it'll be interesting, but yeah, so many great moments over the years with the Shannons, hey, Rich?
Yeah, there was. It was a really good thing, and being part of its evolution over the years was really cool, and seeing it grow and develop. And there were some messy moments, and when Motorsport Australia, CAMS as it was, took over at the end of 2015, wasn't the great moment because it wasn't done particularly well at the time. But since then, it's sort of regenerated again in a new form and became the Motorsport Australia Championships. And then the ARG thing came along, and there's been a growing cooperation between the two of them, and it made the most sense in the world for there to not be two separate entities running this show. Like, it needed to be both of them pulling in the same direction with the TV deal, with everything going on. It makes all the sense in the world where it's going.
Because it was sort of an awkward sort of situation where you had the Speed Series stuff, and they'd have their own package of sponsors involved with that, and
what you're saying was bloody confusing.
Yeah.
Well, welcome to the Shannons Motorsport Australia Championships, brought to you by Shannons with the Speed Series. Hashtag Speed Series. Here on Stan, where all the other Motorsport Australia stuff's on 7+. And it was suboptimal, but that's just the way it had naturally evolved. But it's interesting. It's going to be interesting to see how it moves forward, and a good program next year with 7 events, 5 at normal circuits, and then the Bathurst 6-hour and Bathurst International as well. So that will be the program, and then there'll be a series of other races yet to be announced that Motorsport Australia will promote independently for the other categories that either don't fit onto all of those rounds or need slots, basically. So they will pop up as they get closer.
Now, another one announced during the week there is that the TCR World Tour is going to have a stop within the Super Cheap Auto TCR Australia. It's a bit vague, wishy-washy of the announcement. I don't think they entirely know what they're doing, where and when, but there's going to be 9 rounds next year and a world final somewhere around the world that will basically have, you know, all of the key local championships, but the big teams, you know, that had a TCR, the World Touring Car, the WTCR, was an independent thing that disbanded at the start of the week. And by the end of the week, this replacement that is organized by the people behind TCR, they've sort of brought it in-house. And it's going to tour the planet of all the different TCR championships. They're over Asia, I think the Middle East, of course, Europe, and here in Australia. And Australia's very strong. The one thing in that whole announcement that was put in the bottom of it is that hybrids coming to Australia. They're going to have a certain amount of testing and tuning and whatnot next year before full implementation of hybrid technology and TCR from 2024 in Australia. So that's interesting. Isn't it?
Yeah. What do you think?
Well, I just thought that they missed the biggest thing about that announcement was they didn't say anything about doing it at Bathurst. Like, I thought they were going to have a grade A Bathurst race and bring back the 2 litre days, but to have no TCR event at Bathurst with the world, that series is a world series, which, as you said, Mark, it was some of the best drivers and teams in the world. Surely they would have tried to have done something to a Bathurst race.
I mean, it could still happen. I mean, obviously, I think, not with zero intelligence on the subject, the Bathurst International seems like an obvious candidate for it because, hello, that would tick some boxes. Obviously, it's a bit hard this year for the Bathurst International to get international entries, but looking at the price of freight at the moment and everything else that's going on, hopefully come 2024, you know, if that is the world stop and they can get some other international entries, that'll be a spicy race. I mean, I mentioned to you, Rich, the other week, there's five major events at Bathurst. There's no other circuit in Australia that has five major events. That's huge. It's a huge commitment, and it takes a lot of officials to run race meetings out there. It's a real grind on those guys who, without them, there's no motorsport. But, you know, we're sort of saying to them, hey, we're having five big race meetings here. We need you all here for five of them. So it's a funny sort of situation, isn't it?
Yeah, supply and demand, though, and as long as demand is there. And you got to remember, there were, I think, six initially proposals for that fifth Bathurst event when they put it out to tender. And for those that aren't aware, the maximum number of race meeting events that can be used at that place is five. So that is it. And unlike all the other circuits in Australia, it can't be used for weekday testing and things like that. So from a revenue generation point of view, to maximise what that can contribute back to the Bathurst economy and to the Bathurst Regional Council, who own the circuit, they needed to fill all five weekends. It is, yeah, it's a big commitment, no doubt. But up to this point, what I've liked about the way the Bathurst thing goes around is that each one has its own personality. So the Bathurst 1000 is the granddaddy of Australian motor racing. The 12-hour is the international show. The 6-hour is the grassroots enduro where other support categories get a Guernsey that would never get to race in October. And then Challenge Bathurst is you and I could enter a car in it and go and do time attack stuff and regularity competition. So, yeah, I think the Bathurst International event, where that slots into that little makeup, is probably what we're all going to find out. And I speak to this from someone who's involved in running it. We're all going to find that out in November 11, 12 and 13 in a couple of weeks' time, because at the moment we don't know. And it's an event that has been massively stymied by COVID, because had it gone ahead in 2020 as planned, it would have been unbelievably good. And you would have had international competitors in all of the various ARG categories. So yeah, how that goes in the future. But if WTCR or the world group that WSC that run TCR globally don't go to Bathurst, they're mad. And I don't think you need to be a rocket scientist to work out that there's probably going to be a Macau involvement there with the Gaia street race as well, which is always in late November. So not far away from it here. I'd just put one and one together and get three perhaps, but it makes all the sense in the world, doesn't it? So yeah, we'll find out. Hopefully it'll be nice. So yeah, good times in Shannon's Nationals. Good times this weekend, boys, because we're going back to the Gold Coast. It's exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. How's the FOMO over here? Thanks, Richard. Let's talk up how great the weekend's going to be. I love that track. You know, going and taking photos around the place, that circuit, you can feel the cars. Like, you can literally feel the wind off the cars as they go past. It is so rad. It's such a cool feeling. And I will often just go and stand down there at the first chicane and just watch the cars. It's just such a rad bit of track because they're doing stuff that they're not supposed to be doing. And the fast line around there is you got to hit the fence. And, you know, if you, I said this last year, if you, the last time we talked about it is probably 2019, I guess, you know, you hit the fence too hard and you're going slow. You don't hit the fence at all and you're going slow. It's it's an incredible bit of racetrack. You know, I'm sure team owners hate it, but as a punter watching on, I absolutely cannot get enough of it. And it's going to be a bit of a twist this weekend without the co-drivers. We've had co-drivers there since, crikey, what, 2010? Yeah, 2010. Yeah. So it's been a long run there with the co-drivers and the Gold Coast 600 format. So all changed this weekend. Two 250K races, the sort of super street formula. Tom, what's the form guide? Obviously, Van Giz has won there a few times in recent years, dating back to 2014 when he was at Techno, and subsequently since he's joined up with Red Bull. You know, he's clearly won everything else this year. Is he going to get beaten this weekend?
No.
Good chat. Thank you.
Yeah, great. Right. Thanks for joining us on the grid this week.
Well, I think this weekend's going to be very interesting because it's the first, obviously, single driver race there in a long time. And the Gold Coast is unique in the way that it's set up, but also you've got to be good over the curbs there. And another place that you need to be good over the curbs is probably Sandown and places like Woodcoe. I know they're different style of tracks, but there's a lot of curb action. So looking at those races, CJR and Will Davison had some good success in those races, and Shane also. So look like those two could be the two to beat. Interesting. I had a function with Will. We talked about Gold Coast, and I said to him, how long before the mirrors fall off? And he said, well, in qualifying, we take one mirror off. So that's not great if you sponsor a mirror on a race car. But
do you get a discount for this round? Is there a discount on the invoice?
It's like a cashback program.
I did say just take the photos in the garage before they get on the track because they won't last more than a lap. I think it's going to be a great weekend to see the cars back on the Gold Coast. Remember the last time we were there, obviously Scotty Mack sent a shock absorber through somebody's apartment window. So let's hope we don't have anything like that again. But I definitely think we're going to have some interesting action on track because obviously it's hard to pass with these generation of cars. So qualifying is going to be extremely important on a track where you've got to get the bumpers out.
So the last time there was single driver races there was 2009. Garth Tander won one, Mark Winterbottom won the other. But since then...
No. It was four races that Winterbottom won two because they had two. It was a weird point structure, but they had four races for the weekend because that was the one that the A1GPs blew up.
Yeah, they were supposed to be there that
supposed
weekend.
Supposed to be there, and then supercars stepped up.
So the races. But since then, it's been quite varied in terms of results. And last five races, four different teams have won. So Triple Eight dominated last time out. Jamie and Craig won race one. SVG and Garth won race two, as they were prone to do, and still are prone to do, as it turns out, in this era. Chazzy Mostert and James Moffat won in 18. Remember, the Sunday race was a no-go due to, frankly, ridiculous rain.
Memories. It was so ahead of the game.
Yeah, there was a long way four years ago. Yeah. And then in 17, it was Mostert Owen in race one and Scotty McLaughlin and Alex Primer in race two before that. Triple Eight won both races in 16. But yeah, hard to get a form guide because we haven't done a whole lot of street racing in supercar land since 2000 and early 2020. At the Adelaide 500. So working out how this all plays out. Yeah, but Townsville, it's not really a guide, is it?
Oh, well, like, there's a few little...
Well, yeah, but that's the only consistency. There's a few curbs around the back there at 7 and 8, but compared to the Gold Coast, Townsville is like Phillip Island. It's billiard table smooth, and there are many less things to crash into at that joint. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. But it's one of the events that I've missed the most through this whole period. And that's even including the Adelaide 500, because really we haven't lost a 500 yet. We haven't had a 500 cancelled because it was never going to happen. We got one in 2020. It was never going to happen last year, regardless of whether the government boned it or not. So we haven't actually lost one of those yet, and we get one in 5 weeks' time. But this event... was on the calendar in last year for a little while, ambitiously, and probably never ever going to happen. But it's such a great landmark event on the calendar. It's just so good.
It's the only way to back up from Bathurst, isn't it? If they went to Winton, everyone would quit the circus, wouldn't you?
Yeah, because you need the sunshine.
You need to have a beach next to the track where you can go and have a swim in the morning, and you need to have a place that serves a lot of beer.
Yes.
You need to have a beer on the Surface Paradise. It's just what happens.
Totally.
Adult schoolies.
Schoolies, yes. Wade Ongercoin. Schoolies for grown-ups, he used to call it in V8 Ute Racing commentary. No, I agree with you. Right, who do we think? What do we reckon? And don't say Shane Van Gisbergen.
Jeez, is there anyone else in the race? What do you mean?
So, I mean, he wraps up the title in race one, doesn't he? I mean, that's foregone conclusion.
To get 20 points, right? So he just doesn't have to crash. So yeah, the title's easily over and done with. I think I'm going to go with Will Davison for Saturday and SVG for Sunday.
Okay.
And Cam Waters on pole twice.
So Cam has said in the media this week that they've got a chip on their shoulder after coming so close at Bathurst again. Does that mean we get good Tickford or do we get different Tickford?
I think Cam's been pretty good most of the places we've been since, you know, you basically said they were rubbish for the first half of the season.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yep, sure.
I think Cam hasn't been the problem for Tickford. It's been the others, really. Haven't got the consistency to keep up with Cam and James sometimes. But I think Cam's fine. You know, I think it's going to be between those three. Hopefully this weekend's a step in the right direction for Anton. I think he's got to put a marker down, hasn't performed as well as Will Davison for a while. So I think it's his opportunity this weekend to really get on top of it and give it a good crack at, because he needs to, because Will's probably been better than him in the last couple of rounds.
Actually, that's a good point, Mark. The Anton needs a result, doesn't he? Because it's been a pretty challenging trot for him.
It was a bit of a nothing Bathurst for old Dick Johnson Racing, wasn't it? You know, Willie showed a lot of form in practice in the dry, but everything sort of fell apart on Sunday. Hey, we need a dark horse bet. I'd probably go Reynolds. He won his first career win there. Sorry, my voice just broke. In 2012, he was on the podium there in the last race.
20 years too late.
Yeah, no, it's good. No good.
Well done.
Too tight. But yeah, he was on the podium there in the very last race that we had there in 2019. So some form on the board. That car has been resurrected after Matty Campbell copped the worst of Zane Goddard's bonnet. And yeah, that'll be, who knows? It's such a wild setup. They haven't run on this suspension package there, so it's something that's a bit different. No one's really got form on the board. You can sort of piece together the best street circuit car you think you've got, but we won't really know. And there's bugger all practice too. I think there's 2 half-hour sessions, which really doesn't give them a lot of time to throw a lot of different combinations at it.
Yeah, just on that,
yeah,
this program's a bit ordinary.
Yep.
And
missing a category, and
it's missing a category, and it's not bad Saturday, Sunday, but it's missing a category. Friday's not a good day, and
not good.
And don't spend your money to go on Friday because there's not a lot of track action. It just
it needs the jumpy trucks back.
Yep,
bring them back. Pay your tax on whatever the problem is that doesn't have them here at the moment. Let's get the jumpy trucks back. They were always sweet around
it
there.
It needs that joker category, doesn't it? Whether it's a jumpy trucks, ideally, Aussie racing cars, you know, something amusing, something that's going to cause some chaos racing. I don't think super utes are the answer to that.
No.
Because it's all pretty serious now. Though they have got Roel Harris back, so the excitement potential does go up when he's in the field.
S5000s, that's going to be a bit of fun and games.
Yeah, big open wheelers back on the Gold Coast streets for the first time since 2008. That'll be good fun. Be interesting.
They'll sound good there.
Oh, they're echoing off those skyscrapers.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be pretty cool. What will be good
How many cars, Krause?
Oh, about 10.
Is that good?
No, well, no, obviously. We'd rather there be more than that. There's 12 to 14 for Adelaide 500, but Gold Coast has been a hard sell. But, I think they'll put on a good show, and it's the talent side of things is no problem. There's some good steerers in it, a couple of new guys coming in, which is good. Noah Sands, who won Australian F3 this year, will be running. Nathan Hearn's back, Joey Mawson back. So there's some good front runners in it. Cooper Webster, who's been pretty spectacular in these cars this year and got a win up at Hidden Valley earlier in the season. So, Yeah, oh, look, the product will be fine, and you can get away with a smaller field with those cars. What will be good is the Porsche Carrera Cup finale. So Harry Jones goes in leading the championship by 74 points over Aaron Love, remarkably, who has missed two rounds and at one point was 330 points behind in the championship. If he completes the comeback somehow and wins it, it will be the biggest comeback, certainly in one-make Porsche racing history, but potentially, I've went through the record books. I've struggled to find someone coming from further back in any major national championship in the last 20 years. So it's, it could be a fairly large weekend at a circuit where drama is easy to come across.
The one bit of the coverage that I did catch from Shannon's The Bend on the weekend was the announcement of McIlroy's first driver for the US program between 7+ buffering. That's some pretty cool news, having a bit of an Aussie influence over there.
Yeah, it is. It is. And that was, I was going to make that my hot in the power rankings in a minute's time, but let's expand on that now because, no, it is great. Young Tom Sargeant, Australian Formula 4 champion last year, he's now got a handy lead in Sprint Challenge. Ripper young bloke, really impressive guy, friendly, smiley, deals with the media very well. He's a good interview. But it was his Bathurst 6-hour drive for mine this year that was the highlight, where they qualified on pole. He did the job in qualifying. Then they got excluded for a turbo boost issue, started 63rd, stone motherless last. And by the time he handed the car over to Cam Hill, he was leading. It was remarkable stuff. Really, really cool drive. No, he's a good kid. Really impressive. That's going to be an exciting little adventure, that we heard from Andy McIlroy on the show last week. But to get Tom Sargeant, that's a good get to go over there and take on the Yanks in Carrera Cup North America.
Can I segue to other things North American?
Please.
Formula One and the Circuit of the Americas. Decent race.
Good race.
New rules are okay, aren't they?
Yeah, look, they worked at that track, absolutely. The cars were better to race. Feel for Alonso. The bloke ends up pointing skyward and then blazes his way back through the field and then gets excluded because his mirror fell off. When the car passed post-race technical inspection, didn't get a mechanical black flag during the race, but post-event the stewards have gone, no, we don't like that because someone protested it. Yeah, I'm not too sure about that. I think it's a bit silly.
He was so lucky. If he caught the opening of that fence, jobs off there, that would have been humongous, but got away with the fact that the car could still drive after being airborne and in the fence. That was
points
pretty huge.
Alpine. Yeah. Do we feel sorry for Lewis that he hasn't yet won a race this season and he's come close? I'm not quite sure if I'm there yet, but
a chance anyway if they hadn't botched the pit stop.
No, you're right. And Ferrari qualify on pole, Tom, and find another new and exciting way to lose a Formula One race.
Who hasn't George Russell hit this year? Honestly, he's hit like six different people in good winning positions. Like, I actually thought his race car was quite good, but he's taken multiple people out this year. Mm-hmm. And poor old Carlos, he's done a grand distance of what, seven corners in two Grand Prix because he lost to Suzuka in the rain and then got to the first corner and got taken out here. So,
and isn't it the second time this season he's had that happen in two consecutive races where he's been out early in the race, like lap one or two? Yeah.
Australia, he did it. Yeah.
But
that was sort of awkward. Like, he sort of propped a bit. It was a bit hard on George because I get the feeling if Carlos didn't prop and sort of ploughed on and ran a bit wide sort of thing, he probably wouldn't have been smashed. But that happens. Motorsport.
Surely, poor Danny. I don't know how Danny Rick can get through the next couple of races after that. Coming last, like behind the Tiffy. Like, I know
he's
go Tiffy, but the poor bloke must be absolutely soul destroyed that he can't even beat Latifi now. He must.
Wasting petrol. It is genuinely wasting decent petrol. They pitted him late with that last round of stops and they put hards on him.
Mm.
They go, why would you even bother? Now you're wasting quality hard tyres.
Mustn't not even qualify and just have all tyres for the race so they actually don't put hards on, because all they do is put hards on that car and he hates it, but they just do it every single stop regardless.
Like there were moments during the weekend where he was competent. Like, yeah, oh, hang on, he's back. But at the end of the day, it was better ban on horsey McHorse for the race.
Yeah. poor bloke.
Oh, he's still the king of PR, though, isn't he?
What do we think about him being the reserve driver at Red Bull?
Well, yeah, the left field wasn't the first team I would have thought of, but, oh, look, great. And clearly in this time of resource restrictions and budget caps and things like that, though Red Bull seem to be quite good at dodging around those, the more experience you've got in the simulator and at tests and looking at data and things like that, the better. So to get a bloke who's done that many races and won Grand Prix, and you don't forget how to drive a racing car. So whatever it is that's afflicted him at McLaren, all the reasons that have been discussed, I'm sure he's still absolutely switched on. And yeah, look, I mean, Checo's only got a 1-year deal. I mean, there's 1,001 Red Bull drivers in the pipeline to come in after him, but who knows? There could be an opportunity for him to slide in and win another Grand Prix. But it comes down to the old argument. Do you want to be a reserve driver with a really good team, or do you want to be a race driver with a team that's never going to win a race? Yeah, tough question, isn't it? It's like it's the Lee Holdsworth conundrum. Do you want to be a Bathurst co-driver only and win the great race, or do you want to be a full-time driver and not? So, yeah, swings and roundabouts.
I think it's a great move, to be honest. I think, you know, it's a 50-50 shot that he'd be driving in 2024 in that car. So, yeah, okay, it's going back to where he used to be and, you know, back to Max's teammate again. But, like, surely at that stage of your career, you could take driving for Red Bull, which is potentially going to be the fastest car, than driving what he's been driving now and just struggling. So obviously that he clearly would want to come back and then make sure that his legacy is not the last 2 years at McLaren.
And for that team to have the knowledge that you've got a backup like him in case Max has an issue, whatever it might be, COVID, a crash, who knows, then that's good, pretty good security, isn't it? So,
Tom, question for you. You do a lot of events and corporate hospitality and catering. What would $1.8 million get you? Would it be dinner rolls? Like, how would you overspend your catering budget by $1.8 million?
You get a lot of caviar, that's for sure. That's a lot of, that's a lot of double drops of the steak and chicken. So, you know, you'd definitely have...
Double drop of the steak. We're not alternating. We're giving you the full menu.
No alternate drops, you get both. So congratulations to all the Red Bull hospitality people. You just don't get one, you get both. So that's where they split the $1.8 million. And they probably have to buy some other energy drink as well to blow over the bill. But it's very strange how you can do that. But, hey, they can find a loophole, Red Bull.
Well, it's a good test for these regs and how they punish. And if it does come out that that's where the breach was and it was in catering and they punish them in a sporting sense by docking points or whatever it might be, then that's... I don't know how that looks, honestly.
How is catering, you know, because it's not going to a line item that should be.
It's not going to enhance your budget for making the car go faster, is it?
Well, yeah, it's anyway. the old Melbourne Storm debate where they had, you know, the same thing where they exceeded their salary cap and had things charged.
Two sets of books. Mark, their accounting system was side by side. You remember?
High five.
A little in joke there, folks. We'll just roll on with that.
Good times.
Yeah, good times.
NASCAR.
Yes, very quickly.
Come to a point, they raced at, where were they on the weekend?
Homestead, Miami.
Larson smashed them. Martinsville is the last of the races before Phoenix. Chastain's in by 19. Elliott in by 11. Chastain's actually been going really well lately. Mm. He was second at Homestead. Byron's in. Hamlin's out by 5. Blaney's out by 18. Bell's out by 33 and Briscoe's out by 44. So plenty to play for. Martinsville raced absolute garbage last time. So qualifying is going to be quite important there. The new car doesn't race very well on those short tracks, but it's the sort of place here. If you wanted to put Ross Chastain in the fence, you could very easily do it.
Marco, how would you compare Ross Chastain and Trackhouse to somebody in supercars? Who would they be?
Huh?
That's a good question.
Because they are like a team that has come from the clouds.
And it's almost like it's like if Tom goes and buys Team 18, it's like a team like a Chip Ganassi Racing that's got potential, but you're sort of going in there with, they've got the full factory Chevy backing, so they've had a lot of access to the niceties of life that Chevy brings to the party. But they've made the most of it. So, yeah, it's interesting.
I was going to say it's like, Premier, but
that Trackhouse Premier.
Yeah, but Trackhouse bought a good race team. So, yeah.
Paul's burn.
That's harsh. But let's be honest, Team Sydney didn't do much in there last year. No, that's a good question, Tommy. I like it. I like it a lot. Last one, MotoGP World Championship goes down to the wire at Valencia in a week's time from now-ish. Pecco got a win up in Malaysia. Another good Grand Prix, wasn't it? But not quite enough to seal the deal.
Yeah, MotoGP continues to deliver outstanding races, the best motorsport series on the planet right now. Pecco Bagnaia just held off Enea Bastianini to go to the Italians. That's why you got me to pronunciate that, didn't you?
I did, yeah, totally.
And goes down to the last race where Pecco just has to finish because he's 23 points ahead of Fabio Quartararo on the Yamaha. Great season, come from 91 points behind and nowhere to be championship favourite and look like delivering Ducati's first title since 2017, Casey Stoner. So great weekend in Sepang. Got the race in without having a monsoonal flood. So that's a tick in the box for Kuala Lumpur and Malaysia.
I love Sepang. It's a fantastic racetrack. Absolutely brilliant. Right. Thanks to our friends at Doric, it's time for the weekly power rankings, our hot and not of the week that was. Mark Walker, you kick things off.
Going with comebacks. A couple of big comebacks caught my eye this week. In the press, it's been noted that Calder Park will be coming back. I sort of mentioned this little while ago when I ventured out there that it doesn't look that far off being tart-upable to bring back up to standards. And apparently, Kim and Rodney Jane are going to pump some coin into it, bring the circuit racing back and, fix up the drag track and all the things over on that side. The Thunderdome's a bit of a basket case. They're not going to be able to do much with that. But they actually had a track day on the Thunderdome just the other weekend, the weekend after Bathurst. And
a whole bunch of old Oz cars running around.
Yeah, it looked great. Like the great, people spraying it too. It was huge. So that'd be cool. Can't wait to see Calder Park back on the agenda because it's something that Victoria Motorsport sort of needs is some more facilities. And, there's always pie-in-the-sky stuff about Avalon going around. Believe that when I see it, but Calder Park's already approved. It's already there in a base form, and they just need to put some polish and do the weeds around the edges. And another one that I noticed is that in the US of A, Speed Vision is coming back.
Yes.
Ooh. I was a big fan of the Speed Channel in Australia concept. I noticed that Rick Hendrick's behind it. A few of the original people who started up the Speed Vision concept. And it's a free service over there. On whatever platform they're going out on, but 24-hour day motorsport. I'm a huge fan of that as a concept.
So that was your hot, wasn't it? Yes.
Yes.
Yes, that's definitely hot. Tom?
That's a hot, yes.
Yes, good, good.
My hot is this weekend, Supercars back on the Gold Coast because it is the glamour event on our calendar. It is the event that has been missing from the Supercars calendar because you get the shots of the beach and it's a unique track for supercars. And I know we've seen category. I wish we could have an international category, maybe IndyCar or something else come with that track soon. But this weekend, I'm looking forward to seeing, one, the crowd, two, the on-track action, and three, hopefully no rain to deliver what supercars is missing. And one of the greatest things about supercars is seeing them on two wheels and action and movement over the track and seeing real bullring style atmosphere, something we haven't seen since 2019.
Reminds me, I've got to go and bribe a photographer to take some photos for us because Mark's not going, so I don't know who's going to capture all the excellence for us. We'll get onto that. My hot, I was going to say it was Tom Sargeant because I'm very, very pleased that he's got this gig with McIlroy to go to the States. It's very cool. However, No, that's fine. I had a reserve hot, and my reserve hot is 888 Race Engineering. Cue the social media hate. Oh, my God, they're biased towards 888. There are many reasons for good racing teams to be good racing teams. Car performance is one of them. Smart engineering is one of them. Being adept commercially is another one. But 888 on the weekend did a little 1%er that proved that they're a very good racing team because in Saturday's GT World Challenge race at the Bend, they were running two cars for the first time this season. They were running an identical livery. And excuses can roll forward, but there are many. But those cars look very, very similar. And when one of them's 88 and one of them's 888, when you're looking at them from a quite wide shot at a circuit where the camera's a long way away, pretty bloody hard to spot, as it turns out. And when you don't see them switch them to then attack the race lead, and you call the wrong car going through, it's quite irritating, I'm here to tell you. But not only were Triple Eight incredibly gracious in accepting an apology for ballsing up that call, and young Brock Feeney quoted, "I don't care, mate, I was in the car."
good egg.
The great, yeah, super bloke. The great Jess Dane and Andrew Edwards and the team there worked very quickly to fluoroise the mirrors on the 88 car to make sure that there was a point of difference between them for Sunday's race. Now, Sunday's race unfortunately didn't happen, but it's little one percenters like that, that when it comes down to recognising your car and recognising the team on the racetrack on TV is very, very important to do. Full credit to Triple Eight for nailing that and doing it with a whole degree of grace and humility and doing their best to make our life easier. So it's another reason why they are a very, very good racing car team. That's good. My hot. Knots, Mark.
The standing knot is now for Daniel Ricciardo at McLaren. I mean, that was just a waste of resources. But my real knot is the weather. And obviously you had your stuff going on there at the bend for South Australian tourism. Well done. Mm. But the rest of Australia also had a big red hot Aussie go at it. The Australian Hill Climb Championship was up at Mount Cotton. And this is something that was planned for 2020 and clearly didn't happen then. And it didn't happen in 2021. They finally got it on 2022, got everyone from around Australia. Had some dry running on Saturday, and Sunday was completely washed out. So I am gutted for those guys, because so much effort over years now to finally get that event to happen, and it got washed out. So gutted for the MG Car Club of Queensland up there and all the competitors and everyone who put an effort into that. The Avalon Sprint Cars got washed out. There was a preemptive strike there. I'm glad they did, because it would have been underwater. And Lakeside literally flooded like it was underwater. So, yeah, the rubbish weather in South Australia was in every other bloody state of Australia too. So tough times, and fingers crossed it doesn't go completely biblical this weekend on the Gold Coast. Even though the forecast says sunny and dry, I have a feeling they might absolutely bottle that.
Tom, knots, please.
My knot are race stewards.
Oh, I feel some controversy.
Why do people get penalties for being certain car lengths behind under safety car? How does this happen if you're Pierre Gasly and you're 12 and you get a penalty for being 51 meters instead of 50 meters behind somebody under safety car, when literally there's screenshots of people, every single other person doing it, only one person got penalized? Why is that even a rule? Why does it matter? These Formula One cars, they need to accelerate and brake because that's what they're doing, generating tire temperature. Why does that even matter under safety car? It makes zero sense. You're literally penalizing people like for absolutely nothing. Second point, mirrors on Alonso's car. Seriously, why are we penalizing that for as well? Like, what, just creating penalties. You can turf somebody off the track, but they're going to disqualify you because your mirror's fallen off or you're 51.1 meters behind somebody under safety car. Silly. Get better.
Boom. The thing with Alonso, clearly Haas are just so aggrieved that they've been black flagged a couple of times this year, or bad sportsmanship flagged for Magnussen having the front wing damage. They're just so aggrieved that that's happened to them that they've seen this happen to Alonso and decided to protest him. The thing that irritates me is how harmonious is the FIA when their own stewards have made this penalty, right? After this protest, or protest was lodged and you're allowed to do that. But their own stewards have lodged this penalty and basically overridden the race director and the race stewards during the race because they didn't meatball flag him and said, no, you have to pit, it's dangerous. He doesn't have a mirror. So, yeah, they're cancelling each other out. That's what irritates me about it. I agree with you.
Is there something to be said about the Australian safety car restart thing when the safety car accelerates away that you stop weaving and you get in line and you
line it
up nice and neatly? The other thing that sort of been getting my goat lately about restarts is that I like NASCAR where there's a restart zone. Lately, over the last 6 months, there's been some really late restarts, and I hate that because it's sort of a ploy to try and stuff the field up, and half the time it does stuff the field up and you wind up having a big shunt and having another safety car. I don't mind having a nice safe restart if it all sort of starts at a single point given on the track like they do in NASCAR.
Bridge on Conrad, for example, after the chase.
Anywhere, whatever, yeah. Just mark it out. The action zone that they used to have back in the day.
The action zone.
The AZ, the acceleration zone.
Bring back the action zone.
How good was that?
Good Double times.
Restarts. Bring it back as well. Go on.
Good times.
60 lappers, 60K races.
No, they can stay constrained to history, I think. But the action zone can definitely come back. Why not? Is bloody rain. I'm sick of races getting cancelled, and for the Porsche teams especially, who it's now three different races in three different states for two different series have been cancelled due to rain. And these teams spend an enormous amount of money gallivanting around Australia going car racing. There's careers on the line. There's championship points on the line. It's so frustrating. There's nothing they can do about it. It's completely out of their hands, but the bad luck is just amazing. And, it's brutal, absolutely brutal. If you're trying to build a championship and you get no opportunity to either gain points or entrench your lead or whatever it might be, or to regain points you might've lost earlier in the championship. So, the weekend Ryan Wood had a DNF with a mechanical problem on his car in race two and had no opportunity to recover from that from the back of the top 10 on Saturday, where he could have minimized the damage done to his points from Tom Sargeant. So really frustrating, and it's all wonderful padding time and joking about that, but there's big implications on the line of it, and yeah, I'm pretty fed up with it. Right, that wraps up the show. Thanks, boys. I'm assuming Shebex will be back next week.
Well, we hope so. Look, Richard, just behave yourself this weekend. I know you're going to the Gold Coast, adult schoolies. You're going to behave yourself. Porsche,
my tonsils on Sunday night. I give you the hot tip. Many Porsche, cold, refreshing beverages.
Yeah, Porsche end of season party.
Yes, yep, Sunday night.
Ooh, look out.
Frock up for that one. It's going to be good. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Richard. I'll look forward to watching the races from Hawaii this weekend.
Oh no, I'm happy going to the Gold Coast. I'm not going to lie to you. Thank you, Mark.
Bye-bye.
This has been On The Grid. Don't forget to subscribe via your favourite podcast platform if you do already. And we will see you in 1 week's time to wrap up the GC500 action. Bye for now.